In this episode of Movie Wildlives, we're going to review the movie 12 Years a Slave. It's time for Movie Wallers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
This is Yazdi.
Movie Wallers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings all.
Hello.
We have a special guest today.
Hello.
Anders Wright.
Yes.
I'll let you introduce yourself because I'm going to get it wrong.
Okay, that's fine. I will try to do this. My name is Anders Wright. I am the lead film critic for UT San Diego, the daily paper here in San Diego. And that is pretty much the long and short of it.
Is that all there is about you?
Yeah, there's not much more
that we need to know.
That's what's applicable here, I think.
And
yes.
What a gift to have you reviewing with us.
My pleasure.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you so much for including me.
We're thrilled. We've been trying to make this happen for a while.
Long time.
Glad that we have you on. And
well,
hopefully it'll be one of many.
Let's see how I do.
Okay. Well,
Movie Wallace is always made better when there's somebody else adding to our dribble.
Who knows what they're doing?
Right.
Yeah, that's important.
So, Anders, just to kick off the show then, and just to help our listeners understand where you come from in terms of your movie likes and dislikes,
yes.
Why don't you give us two movies that you would take on a desert island with you? I would hate to say two movies that you would only ever watch. So we always say two movies that you would take to a desert island with you.
With the possibility of perhaps one day getting off the desert island.
yes.
Sure. No, I'll give you two or maybe even three. You know, whenever you work doing this kind of work, writing about film, people are always asking you, what are your favorite movies?
I hate that question.
Yeah, I know. It's hard. But I've tried very hard to look at the difference between what the movies are that I love the most versus what I think are the greatest films of all time.
Mm-hmm.
I think
right.
there's a huge difference between the two of them. So I always look at this question as the movies that have sort of had the greatest impact on me as an individual. Mm-hmm. So with that in mind, one of those movies I would take with me is probably Harold and Maude. I adore that movie, and I've been watching it regularly since I first saw it when I was 15. Another movie I'd take, and this is in a totally different direction, but I dearly love The Road Warrior. I think that's the greatest action movie of all.
I haven't seen that either.
Gosh, there's nothing like it. And they don't
want to add to the list.
Well, and they don't make movies like that anymore because everything has gone so CGI. And now, in fact, they are shooting a fourth Mad Max movie with George Miller, the director, is making it. Yeah, so I'm kind of excited about that. I also, I'm a big fan of The Graduate. That is an important movie to me from way, way back.
Perfect stuff.
Yeah, and there's a movie called Trust by Hal Hartley that came out in the early 90s, which was a film I absolutely adored. It was very important to me as I was kind of learning about film kind of coming up. And then years later, I became very fortunate to work with Hal and become friends with him, and my wife had a long-standing collaboration with him, and we're all very good friends, and it was a very, very weird thing to sort of become friends with someone whose work has had such an impact on you. And I feel very fortunate to have gotten to know that person and actually had that friendship be something that's very real rather than something that's sort of manufactured.
Very nice.
Wow.
So,
oh, the cat's arrived.
And the cat's
cat
arrived.
On the table. Yes.
Yep.
Minnie, Anders is allergic. You got to go away.
Yeah.
Sorry, buddy.
Come.
So I guess that's four.
Interesting. The Road Warrior. We only ever knew it as Mad Max in the UK.
Mad Max is the first movie. The Road Warrior is actually the sequel to Mad Max.
Right, but I think we only ever knew that as Mad Max 2 in the UK, so that's why I never heard of it. But I have seen that, and I remember back in the day loving those movies.
When you write about films, you're not expected to enjoy action films, but when people say what kind of films do you like, I always say good ones.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily matter I want films that are well written, well directed, well acted, well thought out, well considered, and
have an impact on you.
Yeah. And that's what I mean. The Road Warrior is this movie that is you just You'll never make another movie like that. They never will. But it does some. It has some of the most extraordinary action sequences of all, basically. So
I need to revisit it.
Yeah. And now I'm intrigued. What do you think was one of the best movies ever made?
Well, I mean, look, you can always. I would say The Graduate is one of the best movies ever made. But I mean, the classics that people talk about. People talk about Citizen Kane being what it is for a reason. It is an extraordinarily well-made movie. All those old Hitchcock films are still so important. Hello, cat. You know, and what is it? The Third Man, the Orson Welles movie. That's a tremendous movie. Yeah. Another Orson Welles movie, I guess. So, but who wants to sit down and watch Citizen Kane all the time? It is long and slow. Yeah,
I could barely sit through it.
Yeah,
the first time.
Exactly. So when I go back to the films that I want to see over and over, I'm looking for movies that resonate with me on a personal and emotional level. Mm-hmm. And that to me is the key to all of this.
I cherish those movies which almost defy your rationalization, you know, that I shouldn't like this, and it just somehow gets to you in spite of, you know, all the academic considerations, you know, this is cheesy, this is whatever. But then for some reason, it turns something on within you and it's completely involuntary. And I love that.
I also believe very strongly that we're all of us, there's a time in our lives when we're probably between 15 and 25, when we're the most, we're still forming who we are and what our aesthetic is. And that's when we find the books and the music and the films and the television shows and the art that has the greatest impact on us.
That's so super true.
Yeah. And I think I'm now in my early 40s, and I don't think I will ever find something that will have the same sort of impact on me, because I'm more of a formed person at this point. Mm-hmm. And there are pros and cons to both of those things. You can't help but get older. But
and more cynical.
Yeah, that too. I think also now I have a greater appreciation for what I think is really quality work, but I won't be able to have the same discovery of something that I did when I was 22 years old.
Right.
Yeah.
No, that's totally true.
That's a great, great observation. Okay. All right. Thank you, Anders.
Certainly. Yes.
Oh. Yeah.
Should we jump into the review?
Let's jump into the review.
Okay. Well, In this episode, we're going to talk about 12 Years a Slave. It's the latest movie from director Steve McQueen. No, not that Steve McQueen. The other Steve McQueen of Shame fame. Shame fame? Well, the one. Yeah, he did Shame, and he did a movie Hunger. Called Hunger, which I haven't seen.
I know.
It's been in my Netflix queue for ages. I've never clicked play on it because I wanted to give it the kind of time that it needed.
Yeah.
And so much of what I watch on Netflix, I kind of dip in and dip out of. So this is one I wanted to
Taking
watch all in
bites.
One go.
Yeah.
Shame, I think unanimously praised last year. We thought that was the terrific movie.
Yeah.
And I think this movie was first released at the Sundance Film Festival this year. Am I correct in saying
Toronto.
That?
Toronto.
So it came out earlier in the year to much, much buzz and acclaim. The movie stars, I'm going to see if I can say this without butchering it, Chiwetel Ejiofor.
I think that's correct.
We were practicing it before the podcast, and it all went blank as soon as I tried to open my mouth. Michael Fassbender, Brad Pitt. It has Paul Giamatti, Benedict Cumberbatch, Sarah Paulson in it as well in smaller roles. And the story is really about the memoir of a fellow by the name of Solomon Northrup. He was a free man back in the 1800s who ended up being a victim of a kidnapping. This apparently was a fairly common event for for black men who were in states where slavery was not allowed. They would often find themselves in a situation where they were basically stripped of their identity and trafficked into a life of slavery. And this is what happened to this poor fellow here. It took him obviously 12 years for the situation to kind of work itself out. And he wrote a memoir shortly after his kidnapping. And the film here is basically based on that memoir. So, I know. Should we go around the table and just get some opinions?
Sure.
Rashmi, what do you think of it?
Sure. So, sometimes I'm really happy that we have this rule on Movie Wallers, which is we're not allowed to talk about the movie when we come out of the movie, because I think I was just speechless. This movie's so deserving of all of the hype. I was a little bit worried before we went in that, you know, will it live up to the hype? But absolutely, this lives up to the hype. And I'm going to say, if you remain unaffected by this movie, you are made of stone. Great movie. Not an enjoyable one, but I think it's a really important one for people to watch. I think there's going to be Oscar nominations for everyone in this movie. I think Fassbender blew me away. Sarah Paulson, Chiwetel Ejiofor. Every single person's incredible, even if they're only on screen for 5 minutes. Love this movie.
And this.
Okay. I concur. I actually think this is a very important film. I think that what they've done, I mean, beyond the fact that it's exceedingly well acted and it's very well crafted. It is beautiful to watch, even when you're watching things that are absolutely horrific. Mm-hmm. But I think what it does more than anything else is it shows a side of society that when slavery is instituted, it shows that every part of that society is corrupted, and that everyone is degraded by treating a certain class of people as little more than a commodity. And what McQueen has done that is so smart is that he's created several characters who are not played by Chiwetel Ejiofor, specifically the character that Michael Fassbender plays, mm-hmm. I think, where you really see that being a part of this cycle of violence and dehumanization is dehumanizing for everyone involved. He's
as much a victim.
Yeah, he is. I mean, certainly he's got it better off than the people he owns, but every person in this film that is part of that society is broken by it. I think that is the true triumph of the movie.
Yes, the...
Yeah, I agree everything with what Rashmi and Anders have said. I mean, for me, it was an utterly devastating film. And I think it will not be easily forgotten by anybody who watches it. And I think, like the best films, it reflects the universe through the experience of a single person. In this case, you know, this Solomon Northup character. Only, I think it is a universe that nobody wants to talk about these days. And yeah. I think from that perspective alone, I think it should be required viewing for all, but especially for Americans.
Yeah, you guys have basically hit every point that I had here in my notes. I think we'll probably talk about this in the review later on, but for me, one of the most spectacular aspects of the movie is just the performance of Chiwetel Ejiofor here. I've not come across him. Has he done much acting before?
Oh, yeah.
Has he been? Okay.
He's one of those people you sort of like, you're like, oh, that guy.
Yeah, he's been...
Okay.
He's been in many British movies.
Okay, yeah, I'm not familiar with him, but he held such a... He had obviously the key role, but he always did it with such dignity all the way through, and I think that's what, to my mind, was the key element of the story. That despite these horribly adverse circumstances and the things that he did and the way that he dealt with the situation, he just held his head high in some weird way. And even though when he was being beaten down, you could see that. But yeah, everything you've all said, it was well crafted, well written, and superbly acted. Direction. Top notch. I mean, this movie is difficult to separate from the subject matter, so I'm trying to focus at my initial comments at least on the movie. But yeah, wow, what a film.
Yeah, what's interesting to me is I was trying to compare it to The Butler, which kind of has a similar theme through it at the beginning.
And I've actually not seen that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And I don't... Oh, none of you have
seen it.
Oh, yeah. You've seen it now, Yazdi. Okay. And I was trying to think, you know, The Butler was a good movie. And I think at the time I gave it a reasonable review. But I think where this one wins is that it concentrates on one aspect, which is the slavery itself. And it doesn't try to hide things. It really faces all of the issues head on. And I thought that was actually very uncomfortable for people to watch. Mm-hmm. I mean, I actually heard sobbing. Mm-hmm. Literally sobbing in the audience and gasps and
I think I heard it in my row of seats because Yazdi was clearly affected by that.
That was one of the sobbers.
I mean I think it's a difficult movie to watch, but I really admire the fact that the filmmakers chosen just to really concentrate on how slavery affects those around them. And you said it very eloquently, Anders.
It also means that, I mean, I think it forces us to confront this part of ourselves that in this country, certainly, I mean, that's 150 years ago. It's not that far ago.
Right.
And we do prefer to pretend like it's not part of our past. Mm-hmm. But I mean, there's no joke about it. America's economics are built on slavery. And to ignore that is reprehensible in a lot of ways, and yet we choose to we don't want that to be our narrative, but it really is. And the more we're able to take responsibility for our collective past actions, the more we're able to recognize when things like that might come up again.
I mean, I think that's the important thing. I mean, we have to remember it for what it was, so that it isn't allowed to happen again. I do struggle with the, again, this is probably going to sound a little political, but I do struggle with the whole idea that, you know, we have to somehow make amends for the, you know, the things that happened in the past. It was a different culture then, it was a different society. And this movie clearly depicts, I think, how anyone involved in in that kind of brutality becomes part of it.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I think one of the things the movie did really well was it always questions my morality. You know, I think, well, what if I was on the other side of the fence? What if I was, you know, the master of the slave, how would I behave? You know, what if society condoned these things? What if it was legal and not just legal, but but encouraged and required?
Intertwined.
Yeah.
Yeah.
These films make me very uncomfortable, not just because of the depiction of the brutality, but the depiction of the humanity and, you know, what would my role have been?
Yeah.
You know, would I have been the one to stand up and say no, or would I have been the one to sit there and profit from others' misery? I hate that when a movie does that, but that's what makes the movie so effective.
The other thing too that it made me think of, I'm sorry if I interrupted, is that it tells this one man's story very, very well, but in doing so, it makes you realize that it is one story of quite literally millions of stories, most of which will never, ever be told at all. And
yes,
that was very challenging for me.
And he was the lucky one.
Yeah.
He got out.
Yeah.
Spoiler. Anyway.
12 years a slave. Yeah. It wasn't 13.
It could be the last 12 years of a slave. No. I like... that's absolutely true. I mean, I think the issue is they could have made a choice. Steve McQueen could have made a choice to make this movie be broader than it was to be, and I think The Butler suffers because of that, because it tries to get too much within its grasp. And actually, one of the smartest things that 12 Years a Slave does is that it really follows this character and those around him, and in doing so, actually allows the movie to kind of immerse you, put you in that situation, and it's far more successful in the desired effect, which is this commentary on what happened not too far long ago, rather than, you know, trying to have something with a very, very broad swath. So I really like that it was so focused. Now, you know, it's obviously based on a book, you know, which was written by Solomon Northup, so obviously that piece was already there, but I'm glad that they were inwardly looking through all of the movie, pretty much.
So, Yazdi, you were probably one of the most affected people. I've never seen you cry in a movie. I know you probably have, but I mean, I turn around and I kind of let you be on your own. You know, I didn't want to steal the moment for you because I didn't want to take you out of the movie. But whereabouts did it kind of get you? Did it get you right from the beginning?
I think.
And what was the bit that affected you the most? Because you represent a lot of the audience.
I know. I mean, I don't know. It's going to sound really odd when I say this, but this is why Cloud Atlas affected me so much, which is it speaks about oppression. The movie speaks about how humankind as a whole is a miserable species. And whenever it's going to have a chance, it's going to oppress the less fortunate. The kind of oppression changes. But when you're placed in a position of power, it becomes Lord of the Flies. Everybody becomes savages. And even now, I think there's kinds of oppression which is going on, and it just speaks so poorly to human beings as a species. And I know that sounds horrible, but it really, you know, really bothered me to see how one human being could behave like this with another human being and justify it. And even as I'm saying it, it sounds shallow and corny, but in the moment, it was very affecting to see somebody's humanity being stripped away. And I think you mentioned this very early on when you started, Anders, but I think the genius of the movie and one of the reasons why it's so exceptionally well made is a few things it does. One of the things it does so effectively is that, you know, there's a lot of pain inflicted in this movie. And we've watched so many movies which have extreme violence in them. Mm-hmm. And we are conditioned to have the camera at the last minute pull away from the actual pain. You know, somebody's coming at somebody with a knife, but you never actually, in most movies, see the knife get into them. And so you think when you're watching this movie that the camera is going to pull away at the last minute. And it doesn't. And it stays there. And it's on and on and on. And it kind of makes you complicit with the actual action. It kind of makes you witness and somehow a participant. I actually felt some of that pain, like the physical pain. And it's a hard thing to do because it can be very alienating, but it completely works. It, you know, it really pulls you in.
And it works because the violence is in no way exploitative.
Yeah.
The movie that I kept thinking about when I was working on my pieces for this was Django Unchained, Tarantino's movie from last year, which is not trying to do the same thing at all. It's, you know, it really is an homage to those Westerns from the 60s and 70s. But the place that movie runs into trouble is that it plays the violence for laughs and for action, and then later asks us at certain moments to take similar violence seriously.
Yeah.
And because there's no real distinction between them, it's hard to actually do that. Every piece of violence in 12 Years a Slave is upsetting. And all of it feels very, very real. But I also think that, well, I agree with you that it does make you as a viewer feel somewhat complicit to pull away, to pull the camera away. I mean, he's trying to tell the truth of what happened, or to show a truth, a side of it.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not there for shock value.
Exactly.
I think that was the issue with Django, which now in my mind has turned into this horrible cartoon of a movie. I mean, I enjoyed Django. I thought it was brilliant, but...
Remember, I was the only one who said
it was
Tarantino's laziest movie. Tarantino is a great writer. It was his laziest movie precisely for this reason, is because you cannot make entertainment out of slavery. Maybe you can. God,
does that mean Yazzie was right?
I think so. I think we have to give it to
him. You,
maybe you're right, but my point is you cannot take a subject as loaded as slavery and be so shallow about it, which is what I think Django did.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But
So let's talk about the acting, because however good Chiwetel Ejiofor was, for me, Michael Fassbender was the star of this movie, because I think he had the biggest load to carry. I think it's hard to play a bad guy, but at times, but to be in a position where you start to understand why he thinks the way he thinks, not that you agree with it, but to try and understand a person, he conveyed that to me amazingly well. And he displays humanity. I mean, especially when you see the relationship between him and his wife, and I don't want to give anything away, but when you see that relationship and then some of the things he does, and he's a mean man, he's a great bad guy, he stole the show for me in this one.
I wouldn't say he's mean, I would say he is rotten. Like his insides have curdled. Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, I think that he's the key to the whole movie, because he shows, you know, Benedict Cumberbatch has a smaller role where he also plays a plantation owner, and you see a number of people in that are sort of holding the whip rather than being on the end of it, but his character, Fassbender's character, is the one where you really see it. It takes everything that has been leading up to that moment in that movie, and you see now just how horrific the entire situation is. And I would say this, I mean, Fassbender has starred in all three of McQueen's movies.
Yes.
They do each other right. But you see over the course of Hunger and over the course of Shame and over the course of, you know, McQueen has discovered an actor who will do anything.
Yes.
And
well.
Yeah. But every one of those things are so degrading. I mean, it's such a degrading performance. Yeah. I think he's quite a wonderful actor. Mm-hmm. And you do feel a modicum of sympathy for his character at a certain point here. And yet at the same time...
And then I wanted to slap myself when I felt that.
Yes, exactly. At the same time, you hate him. Yeah, he's a horrible individual. He's represents everything that is that humans can do wrong. I mean, it's that.
No, you're right. I mean, you do feel for him and his predicament in a kind of a weird way, because I think given different set of circumstances, this man would not have been who he was. I mean, I think he was very much not necessarily a victim of circumstance, but
it's a product of circumstance.
Right. Yeah. The environment in which he was in enabled those behaviors as instincts, like you say, to fester, I understood that more than anything, which is why I think, you know, again, to my point I made earlier, this movie always makes me question the way that I would behave in those circumstances. You know, if I had been a plantation owner in the South in the 1800s, I would have had slaves, and I'm not sure I would have been that guy to do anything other than, you know, what these people do. And that makes me horribly uncomfortable.
Well, the other question is this. So you take those two characters, the Fassbender's character and Benedict Cumberbatch's character, and they're both plantation owners, but they're at sort of different ends of the spectrum.
Yeah,
but
morally.
But are they morally at different ends of the spectrum? I mean, that's the question.
They just play it differently.
They respond to it differently.
I think they are. No?
I mean, they're both still owning slaves.
They're both depending on slave labor.
One just says thank you.
Yeah. But if you're in a pile of crap, how you respond to the crap? You can't just say you're both in a pile of crap. Well, how do you respond to when you're in a pile of crap?
Well, I mean, this also gets
to this and move north. I mean,
no, that's unrealistic.
Well, but what the other side of it it that's interesting is that what it does show regularly throughout the movie, and this is really interesting to me, is that we always think of slavery in very human terms, but the movie also looks at slavery in economic terms.
Yeah. Yes.
Every one of these people, they own plantations, but they all have debts to pay. They have a bad year of crops, and they've got to figure out what to do. It is an economic issue that then curdled all of the humanity about it.
Yeah.
It's what you would do with your cattle, right? Mm-hmm. If the rains don't come, you know, what do you do with your grazing animals? I mean, that's how the movie depicted the movement around of slaves. They were property, and they
the commodity, yeah.
Completely commoditized.
Yeah.
I mean, going back to the acting, yeah. I mean, I we can talk about this for hours. I mean, Chiwetel Ejiofor, you know, it's such a difficult role because it could get showy, it could get too sympathetic, it could, you know, it could be a role which is begging for your sympathy, and it's never at any minute doing that. I mean, he never overplays it, I think, and everything is through his eyes. I mean, one of the other things I really liked about this movie, and that's true for almost all of Steve McQueen's movies, is that, and they mentioned about this in the NPR interview where Terry Gross interviewed Chiwetel Ejiofor and Steve McQueen, is his scenes seem to always last a good 5 or 6 seconds longer than where most other movies would cut away. Somebody says something, the action happens, and then the camera stays on for another 4 or 5 seconds.
He lets his actors work.
Yeah. And it really kind of helps you. Like, there's a scene towards the end of the movie where it's just a tracking shot. The camera literally follows Ejiofor from one side all the way to the right. That's all it is. He doesn't say a thing. He doesn't do a thing. And it was one of the most effective scenes for me because the movie kind of pauses at that moment to what's happened to him. And it lets you kind of digest that. And it kind of all starts to accumulate, the weight starts to gather. And you know, this kind of stuff is not easy.
No.
Yeah, and it was interesting, actually. It's funny that you should say about those long shots. The one thing that I noticed a lot was there's a lot of long shots, but sometimes it's of innate things. So it'll be like a violin string or the water wheel. And I didn't quite understand that, but it would be like a long shot and it would be an extreme close-up of something strange. And then towards the end, we started getting long shots of close-ups. And that's just one thing I didn't. It kind of took me out of the moment because I couldn't understand the value of it. So any thoughts?
I mean, at the end of the day, I haven't seen anything that would take away best picture credits from this.
Right.
There's still a long way to go this year, but when you watch this movie, you feel like you're watching an Oscar movie.
Yes.
But not in a way that feels manufactured.
Yeah.
I was not
like The Help.
Yeah.
Which is a pure exploitation movie.
Or Lincoln, even. It's not a movie that it feels like it's a movie that it feels like an it feels like it's an important film, but not one that is going out of its way to show you that it's important.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's why it's important. I guess the one thing, did Brad Pitt's appearance take anyone out of it?
Totally. It's the only note that I have in terms of performances in that his celebrity so worked against him and the movie at this point that for him to come in with the role that he had was just distracting to me. I was very, very frustrated by that.
Yeah, I didn't have that experience, but you can't help but think like, oh, here's Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
and I kept thinking, where are the twins? Yeah. Where's the other kids?
But my point is, I mean, I've said this before, I think Brad Pitt's best work is ahead of him. He's great as a character actor. And, you know, the sooner he sheds all this, you know, lead actor, you know, burdens off of him, he's going to be great. And here he is again, I think, in a very small role. And I think, okay, so granted, you do say, oh, there's Brad Pitt. It does pull you out because everybody else is relatively unknown in the movie. Although there's Paul Giamatti, there's
Paul Dano brilliant. Right? Loved him.
But, you know, I really like that Brad Pitt is starting to follow now this George Clooney model where, you know, he kind of is picking really interesting movies to be in. And he's doing his World War Z, which makes millions. And then he's investing his money in a little Steve McQueen movie. He's putting his stamp of approval. He's producing it, saying, this is what I care about.
And it's true. I think if Brad Pitt isn't in that small role, the movie probably doesn't get made.
Right.
So.
And it doesn't get sold.
You're probably right about that. It was just, It had to be that role,
yeah.
Right? And I think those who have seen the movie will understand it. But for me, it was just like he picked up the screenplay. He was producing it, obviously. Plan B, his production company, had a lot to do with this movie.
But I was like, he's like, yep, there I am. That's me. I'm doing that one. No. Yeah, absolutely. Really I agree with Joe. Okay. He wasn't going to do the Paul Giamatti role, okay. And he certainly wasn't going to do the Paul Dano one.
Why not? I think he would have totally done it. Look at what he did in 12 Monkeys. Look at what he did in...
But 12 Monkeys is 15 years ago now.
Yeah. But it's like, this is like nitpicking. I mean, it didn't destroy the movie, but I just felt for 30 seconds, it's like, oh, why did you make that choice? Anyway, back into the movie.
Right, then. Right. Yeah.
All right.
The only other piece I want to talk about is, I agree completely about all of the acting that you guys have mentioned, but for me, really, the heart of the movie was the Patsy character,
yes.
You know, played by newcomer Lupita Nyong'o. She, I mean, it is Solomon Northup's story, but she kind of represents where your heart is with. Even when the movie ends, you're left wondering about her. And this kind of stuff, again, is very difficult to do. This can come off as such a cliche, that character, but she's so real. And you know, she's not a device. And, you know, from a plot perspective, she seems a device. Of course, this is based on a true story. Nobody wrote this, but it could have so easily been a device.
Yeah.
But it's not.
And I feel like Joe was saying, she almost makes you question your own morality, because at times, if I was a co-worker, I put that in inverted commas, if I was a fellow slave, I would hate her, right? You would hate her because she seems to get some extra... Mm-hmm. gifts, in a sense, but then
it works against her.
It works against her, right?
That's not the way I would put it.
But. No, but what I'm saying is, initially, that's how you. It kind of questions your morality in a way of what you would think of someone in that horrible situation. But I agree with Yazdia. Very good, very well acted. Again, very difficult to play. Okay, so let's go to conclusions and scores then. So, Anders is our guest reviewer. Why don't you go first? Give us a summing up and a score out of 10.
Well, I think it's a fairly masterful piece of storytelling. It expresses larger societal issues through a very well-told story of one person, and it's very, very well-crafted as well. Out of 10, is that we're doing? I mean, I think this is a 9 or 9.5. It's a movie that really stays with you, as it should, so... Yeah.
Are you going to let Anders have that off?
He's a guest. He's allowed.
I'm whipped every time.
Yazdi can never make up his mind between two scores, so he always goes with the half. And I'm like, we have a 10-point scale. Why are you making it
9.3?
there's no granularity there.
You should be glad I'm not into decimals.
Yazdi, whole numbers only.
I really, one of the things I like about this movie is that it is angry. And I don't think people make angry movies anymore. You need to have a position. Stop being neutral already. I mean, I'm sick of movies which don't take a stand. And this movie is so angry and says, you know, how dare we try to forget that this actually happened in the not too recent past? You know, how dare we try to brush this aside? And I don't think it's ascribing guilt as much as just saying, talk about this. This was our past. You know, we don't need to ignore it. So, you know, I'm beginning to think the best movies this year might have the number 12 in them.
Yeah.
You know, 12 Years a Slave, Short Term 12. So I really think this is one of the best movies of the year. It's a very, very easy 9 out of 10. It just completely emotionally devastated me. I was like a puddle at the bottom by the time the movie ended.
I know, I wanted to put my arm around you, but I was just like, this is your moment. I have to leave you alone. Okay, I agree with what you've said. 12 Years a Slave will stay with you long after you've left the theater. And clearly one of the most powerful movies I've seen this year, 9 out of 10.
Yeah, unanimous nines, I guess. For me, this is obviously a very important movie, and as you made the point that it's going to be award fodder, but it just doesn't feel like that. It feels much smaller, much more
intimate.
Not necessarily intimately made, but it doesn't feel like, you know, they were playing towards, you know, let's see if we can get a best actor from this one. Let's see if we can get a best director. It was not made that way. Compelling story. So many different aspects of humanity are here. It makes me question my morals, my perspective, the law, social norms, everything. Go see this one, everybody. It's not a movie you will enjoy, but it's a movie you will admire. And I think it's a movie that inherently it will change you.
Yeah, I do want to mention a couple of things. I've been telling a couple of people to watch it, and there seems to be a perception going around, maybe the way the movie's been marketed, that, oh, it's heavy and it's too depressing and it's, you know, gut-wrenching, and people kind
of... It's all of those things. It what is, are you talking
but,
about?
But it's in the best way that cinema can be those things. And so I don't think people should somehow shy away from this movie. I think people should embrace it and really, you know... So, you know, you can watch right. your...
It's not about the brutality of slavery. Yeah. It's about slavery, which includes brutality. I mean...
Though I should say, I had a friend text me yesterday to say, oh, my wife and I are going out for our anniversary this weekend. Oh. Should we see Twelve Years a Slave? I don't think so. Yeah.
Maybe not that, yes.
Oh, dear. Yeah, send them to see Carrie instead.
Yeah, I was like, go see About Time. That'll be fine. You'll be fine.
Yes, yeah. Good choice. Yes. Good advice.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess we're going to wrap up this podcast for today. Anders, thank you so much for joining us. Yeah, brought a lot to the table here. We're
certainly
really pleased to have you on Movie Wallers. Mail at moviewallers.com. Do let us know what you think of the movie. Let us know what you think of our reviews and the show in general. Twitter.com/moviewallers, Facebook.com/moviewallers as well. I guess until our next episode, it's too many movies, too little time. A good night from me.
And me.
And me.
And me. Thank you.
Yay.